Hi, this is Kevin Wilmont, the writer, director, and star of Destination Planet Negro, and you're watching Mr. Media.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. On today's show, I'll welcome Kevin Wilmont, writer, director, and star of an offbeat race comedy, Destination Planet Negro. No, really, that's what it's called. It imagines the United States in 1939, a time when blacks see their lives as truly hopeless. Black leaders, led by scientist George Washington Carver, decide to do something about it. They build a spaceship to send their entire race to Mars. But something goes terribly wrong. Or maybe terribly right. Stick around. This is The Shit. Watch the movie. That'll make sense. Especially coming out of my mouth. The movie is called Destination Planet Negro, and it is as twisted, smart, and funny as the title implies. Take a little Spike Lee, circa She's Gotta Have It, stir in a pinch of the TV series In Living Color, add some Flash Gordon and Lone Ranger, an episode of The Time Tunnel, a few moments of inspiration from Bender on the animated Futurama, and yes, even a colorful chunk of The Wizard of Oz, and you'll find yourself on Planet Negro. Kevin Wilmont is the writer, director, and star of Destination Planet Negro. He also was co-writer on the Spike Lee film Chirac. Did I get it right that time?
You got it.
All right. In his new film, he combines moments of great social satire, hello Strom Thurmond, with serious political points about race and sexuality. And it's really weirdly funny, too. Kevin Wilmont, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you. So, Strom?
Yes. Strom the robot.
That's just, I was like, what the hell? And he gets all the best lines, you know?
Yes, he does. I know. What do you say about Strom, right? Well, probably you don't know this, but I'm the voice of Strom in the film.
I kind of wondered, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the voice of Strom, yes. And I was trying to do Strom Thurmond, but I think at times I sound like Fred Sanford or something.
So. Yeah. It's just a lot of things going on in that voice, which
is
good.
A lot of things going on with Strom. He's got some real identity issues, racial identity issues, a lot of things he's dealing with there.
And I guess I should explain so we don't lose people completely. Strom is a robot and is sort of a little bit like Bender on Futurama, a little bit Robbie the Robot, a little bit the robot on Lost in Space, and there's some references here and there too.
Yes,
right. But why on earth would George Washington Carver build a robot? I mean, amazing in 1939 he built a robot. My God, but give it the voice of the name Strom and the voice of this horrific racist.
It just kind of evolved. It started out, the joke kind of started out with the name robot is I think Czechoslovakian or something for slave, and so robot means slave. And so we have this bit where he says that, you know, I named him after my old master when I was a slave. This is George Washington Carver talking. And and so it just went insane from there.
it really did.
It had meaning in the beginning, and it just went crazy.
Oh, it gets really out of hand by the end. Stuff coming out of his mouth. Oh, God. It's like – and it's really funny to find out that you were, in fact, the voice of Strom, because you play kind of the main character in this. I mean, there's three main characters, if you will, but you're definitely one of those three. And you're very straight-laced and, you know – you say all these very important, intelligent things. And now, of course, you know, I'm just like, oh, my God. Now I want to go back and watch it one more time. the contrast is so great.
Well, yeah, we had a lot of fun, you know, with the whole thing of, you know, just you know, the three characters, myself, you know, I'm Dr. Avery, and then Danielle Cooper plays my daughter, you know, and then Race Johnson, you know, Tosin Morhonfala plays him. And, you know, in all those old sci-fi movies, there were always like three people, and there was always like, the professor always has a daughter or something that is, right. is always That's part of the right. part of the deal, you know. And so I'm just having fun with that whole little convention of all that.
And I like Race tells people to call him Ace.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
And the woman playing your daughter, her first name is Beneath.
Benitha.
Benitha, yeah. I mean, Benitha, where did that come from?
Well, that's actually a name – from the play Raising in the Sun.
Really?
Benitha, yeah. And of course it has all those connotations too, you know, Benitha, you know, the whole thing. And so yeah, I'm playing with all kind of deadly
You are. I mean the guy's name is Race, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I got a sense of that. But when I didn't realize her name was Benitha until I read the credits afterwards, and I went, Benitha, okay, there's something going on there, but I didn't make the connection to Raisin in the Sun.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm also, you know, remember on Johnny Quest, remember there was Race Banyan.
Race Banyan, right.
You know, so I'm having fun with that too, you know, so it's like, you know, I'm pulling from every, you know, little pop culture thing I can pull from. You know?
Oh my God, I'm talking to the, black Kevin Smith now. Bringing in stuff from everywhere.
Bringing stuff from everywhere.
Oh
here.
My God! Yeah, and they reached a point where I thought I got to stop just writing things down and just enjoy the film, because there, you know, I mentioned at the beginning. I mean, Time Tunnel and Futurama and Lone Ranger. What was it? Flash Gordon, obviously.
Right.
I would have loved. This is what I was thinking. I would have loved to have been in the room when you started pitching this the first time for investment, because I assume you had to go through that.
No, I did this totally on my own.
Really?
You know, I knew this was so crazy. I wasn't even going to try to talk to people about this. I just decided to just, you know, because, you know, part of me being I'm a professor at Kansas University also.
So independently wealthy, of course.
Well, clearly. And so, you know what I make, you know, this is my seventh feature film I've made. And so, you know, I used the equipment at Kansas University. And then I really pulled in favors from all my buddies that had been in my other movies and stuff. So that's how we got it done.
So the budget was how much?
You're going to trip out when I tell you. The budget was $5,000.
Holy crap. Really?
$5,000.
That would have cost like one of the fins on the fake rocket ship. I mean, how do you
right.
how did you make this for $5,000? Okay, I want to go in a completely different direction now. How did you make this thing for $5,000?
Well, everybody worked for free. Everybody worked for free.
They bring their own food and clothing too?
What I spent the $5,000 on was meals, and the cinematographer is a professor I work with as well.
Wow,
Matt Jacobson. He's a sci-fi total, you know, expert, and we've been talking about making a sci-fi film for a lot of years, and so he built the rope. He built the spaceship, you know, that we use in the film. He built that. The robot was built by another buddy of mine that does my props in all my other films, and so he built it from just stuff he had around, you know, and then it took about 2 years or more to make the film. We did it a little bit at a time, and that's one of the reasons I play, you know, one of the leads, is because I knew I would always show up. so you know, that whole thing was always really designed from the beginning, because I knew I didn't have any money, but I knew this could be a really cool idea, and I probably the most frustrating thing about making films is the whole getting the money thing, you know, and it's always a challenge. And so I just thought, you know, and then, you know, the two leads with me are my former students.
Wow.
So, and as well, the Trey Byers, who is now on Empire, was one of my former students as well. So this is before he got on the Empire. And then my good buddy, I can't think of his name right now. Wes Studi.
Right.
Wes Studi, my good buddy Wes Studi, you know, he did the favor for me. He was in my film, The Only Good Indian. And so it just pulled in favors from everywhere.
So, I mean, have you broken even yet?
Not quite. That's sad, isn't it?
Well, I mean, the film's been available for, what, a week or two?
It's been out a little bit now, and this is one of the reasons why you don't want to spend a lot of money on a independent film, because it takes a while for the money to come back your way.
But we
thoroughly enjoy getting it out there, and people really, the reviews have been really good, and it's been great to see people enjoy the film.
Well, I want to talk about the pacing in a minute, but I'm still stuck on $5,000. And did you shoot in Lawrence?
Yeah, shot in Lawrence in Kansas City.
So you didn't have to go away, and
we didn't go anywhere. Everything was. I have a sound stage at the university that we built the spaceship set on, and we just found old junk equipment, and then my buddy that is a prop guy, he loaned me a bunch of good stuff that he had, and the control panel is an old editing bay from back in the film cutting days. And so we just kind of figured it all out, and of course when I was writing it, I was writing it knowing I wasn't going to have any money. Mm-hmm. So I'm making choices, writing things for people I know, things like that.
There are film professors around the country right now who are going to watch this and go, God damn it, $5,000.
$5,000.
I mean, there is no film student in America who should not be able to make a movie after hearing this story.
Well, the thing is that the big thing with making movies is when you don't have money, you do have time. And, that old adage, time equals money. And time is what gets you in filmmaking, because, you bring a bunch of people together and you got to make it right then. You got 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks to get the movie made, get the movie shot, and then everybody goes away. And I knew I couldn't afford to do that. So it was really, I tried to put a lot of scenes with the three main characters, because I knew those guys would be, I was one of them, so I know I would always show up. And, so there's choices like that you make that really help to pull that off.
Was there anything that you had to change over time, because so much time did pass that someone wasn't available, or circumstances, or whatever the case?
Yeah, there was one scene I wish we would have had a chance to shoot that we didn't get a chance to shoot, that would have tied things together even a little bit more in the film. But as a whole, we really lucked out. It takes a while when you do it this way. It took us several years, shooting mainly on weekends or whenever we get everybody scheduled together. Cause that's the other thing, actors people have to make a living. They got to go on to other projects. So you're kind of waiting when they're free to come back and do something, kind of thing. And like Wes came, it was just a weekend. He came down and we just hung out for that weekend, and we shot all his stuff in one day. So it worked out really well.
It's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing story. I mean, I was expecting to hear these great pitch stories, but this is even better. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing about pitching is that, it was – when you're making a film like this, I don't mean this in an egotistical way, but you when you're dealing with sensitive subject matter, race, and you're satirizing things, and you don't want a lot of people kind of, putting their ingredients in the sauce. Mm-hmm. I knew kind of, the balancing act I had to play here with the film in terms of being funny and being serious, and I didn't want to debate about things I wanted to say in the film, and all that.
Did you ever have in the back of your mind, I've got to have students who are going to watch this, and even though it's a low budget, they're not going to be thinking that it's low budget when they watch it. They're going to be thinking, what did Professor Wilmot do, and does he actually, can he actually do what he tells us to do? You know what I mean?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a it's kind of a good pressure that you get from that a little bit, because it makes you, it makes you aware that people kind of are looking at you beyond the audience. Your home crowd is looking at you, and your job is looking at you. I'm sure the deans and the chancellor are going, what the hell is he up to now? But that's all kind of part of what makes a film like this kind of cool, is that, you know, you're saying, I'm going to put myself out there. I believe in this. I think this is a story worth telling in the way I'm going to tell it. And you know, it's kind of all part of what makes it important, hopefully.
I mean, there's some great stories in the last 30, 40 years of filmmakers who have started with these, you know, budget, low budget things where they've, you know, they borrowed on their credit cards. Robert Rodriguez, Kevin Smith, who I mentioned before, guys like that.
Sure.
And, you know, have, but, you know, you put them all to shame.
well, you know.
And you did science fiction. I mean, you know.
Yeah, in period. We have a little bit of a period thing.
And I mean, clerks happen in a convenience store. Not a lot of special effects you got to figure out for that.
Right, that's right. And, you know, and part of, you know, what's kind of a challenging to, I think, film, you know, low-budget filmmakers, independent filmmakers as a whole, is, you know, things that I kind of use to our advantage in this film. You know, the fact that, you know, I've got all these great former students that are really good at what they do now. You know, I've got a, you know, Derek Sellens, who's, you know, just is a great special effects guy. And so he makes everybody disappear in the film, you know, and turn colors and different things, you know. And he did all these special effects with the rocket ship out in space and putting asteroids in the world and things like that that would have been a challenge before. You know, it's just like, you know, computer stuff, and bada bing, bada boom, it's done.
It's amazing. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Ed Wood just rolled over in his grave.
Yes, indeed. So Ed's stuff would be a lot slicker today if he had the software these days. You know, it'd be a lot slicker.
Plan 9 from Outer Space might have been the second worst movie in the world instead of the worst. You know, if he had access to a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too was that the you know, the look of the film when you know, we're trying to connect with that those old sci-fi films that had those early 50s kind of special effects, and you know, things weren't perfect back then, you know, and you could always tell, you know, they were trying really hard, but you could always tell that, you know, it was still a model and all of that. And so we embraced all that. It's all part of the fun of the film.
It just occurred to me as I took a sip on my soda. Did you guys ever try to plant any product placement and,
you know,
and go back afterwards to try to, you know, clean up on it?
You know,
that's a mellow yellow, by the way, Coca-Cola.
Yes, indeed, mellow yellow. That's some good stuff.
It is.
You know, the problem in our movies is always that people want to take the products out of our films.
No, come on.
Get that thing out of the movie. So, no, I won't even try anymore. Even when I think that I've got a movie that would be really good for some kind of product placement, and where you don't have to look like you're totally selling out, and
right.
and you can maybe get a little help, it never seems to work out. So I never
don't
try.
Sell out. That's all I can say.
Don't sell out here, right?
Did was there ever a time when the movie was intended to be either all comedy or all drama? I mean, there's a real serious through line here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of wanted it in the balancing act that's in the film now. That was always the concept, you know, to, you know, kind of a little more of a serious Blazing Saddles, you know what I mean? You know, where you're having fun with playing with genre and you're making fun of stuff. But then, you know, Blazing Saddles has those moments too a little bit, but there's no through line throughout the film that's kind of, you know, has a serious kind of message there a little bit. And so that was the difference I was really trying to make. I wanted to be as, you know, as hopefully as funny as Blazing Saddles, but with a little more to say.
Can I give away the tonal difference from the beginning to the middle? I mean, because it starts off as a black and white film. It looks very much a period piece of the 30s, and then something happens, which we don't want to give away, and then it becomes a color film. And one of the other things that, at least I thought, maybe I'm wrong, but when it's a black and white film at the beginning, the tone, the pacing is different.
Uh-huh.
There's like, people will say something, and there's like a beat, there's a pause.
Right.
Then once it becomes a color film, it's faster, which is very much the difference between, you know, say, The Wizard of Oz and MTV. Or
yes,
am I making that up? Or
no, you totally nailed it. I mean, that's exactly right. And in a sense, you know, we shot the beginning like those would have been 50s sci-fi movies we were really trying to connect with more. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's a whole different style of filmmaking. It's a whole different style of thinking about, you know, whatever science there was in those movies, you know. I mean, I always loved the whole thing how, you know, the astronauts would just have leather jackets on, you know, and their faces would warp and stuff because the rocket ship takes. I mean, all that stuff I pulled from the title comes from a movie called Destination Moon. And then there was Rocket Ship XM. I pulled stuff from that. And so, you know, all those old, I call them silver bullet rocket ship movies, you know, that, you know, Abbott and Costello go to Mars, you know, Three Stooges go to Mars, you know, those kind of things.
Right. Well, of course, right back to the very first feature film, George, what's the hell is his name? George.
Yeah.
Professor, tell me, what am I, Man in the Moon.
Where the
rocket hits the eye of the
rocket
moon.
Hits the eye, yes, yeah. It's the moon and the eye, yeah, no yeah. doubt. Yeah. And you know, and so yeah, we were having fun with all that. And so, you know, it when we, you know, it's like the beginning is like you know, an homage to those films, and then when we land, it's kind of like, you know, it turns into reality TV a little bit.
Yeah, You deal with race in the film. Unwarranted police stops, if you will, fear of a black planet. But you also then you surprise people, me certainly. You go a little off of that and you introduce the subplots with gay rights and Native Americans. Was that in the plan all along, or did that kind of develop as the film went along? Or
it was always kind of conceptual, but it did develop as the film went along too. I mean, you know, part of what I was trying to do was really just, I have a kind of a weird family. You know, my father was 60 when I was born. He was born in 1898.
Wow, powerful swimmers on that man.
Yeah, you know, yes, indeed. I'm hoping I can last that long too, as they say. So, you know, the thing is that, you know, I've thought a lot about when President Obama was elected about, you know, what my parents would have said, you know, if they'd been able, because the joke was growing up was always, you know, if there was a black president, he'd like be dead the next day. You know, that was always the joke, right? And so when it happened, and you know, you had to really kind of think about how far we've come and how far we still need to go. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's all that talk in the beginning about post-racial society and all that stuff. So it seemed like a great vehicle to kind of explore all of those issues, and so that was, so that made a lot of those, you know, the gay rights issues, you know, Native Americans, but my boy Wes, you know, all those things, that it all seemed like it was just a great way to be able to deal with a lot of different things.
You know, when you say that, it's kind of amazing to think that a young president, a young guy like Jack Kennedy, didn't make it out of his first term, and Obama, the first black president, cruising to the end of his second term, more popular pretty much than any president in modern history at that point in his administration. That's pretty amazing.
People don't know that we're kind of living through a huge transition in terms of American life here. You know, and you know, I love Gil Scott-Heron. You know, it's like we're kind of deciding to be, you know, Bob Dylan instead of Matt Dylan. and that's kind of what we're going through right now, and that's why it's a rough time right now too, because it's a real transition, and that's kind of what we try to show in the film, is that, you know, that the astronauts, you know, I mean, they get to experience that transition, and that's why it's so confusing to them, because, you know, on one hand it's like, man, things are great, and then the other hand it's like, whoa, what's, how can that still be going on?
Right.
You know,
well, and that kind of leads me to you're very playful with your exploration of language and the way words are used, and I'm on a tightrope here, because language is not an issue on the show, but there are still some words that people are very sensitive.
Yes, indeed.
Probably more so coming from my mouth than your mouth.
Sure.
How do you decide to have these characters understand and explain the difference between? Can I use the words? Are you
sure? All right. No, you're good with me.
In 39, they're referred to as niggers. I mean, you can't – there's no getting right. around it. And so right. when they pop up in this other time period where Barack Obama is the president and people are going around calling each other my nigga,
yeah.
it's very hard for them to grasp.
Yeah. And to me, that was a big point I was trying to make with the film. I mean, that was one of the early things I wanted to really deal with, was that, you know, that how much things have changed and how much things have remained the same, and is it really progress, you know? And you know, the line we have in the film where, you know, they run into these rappers and they say, well, when they hear them saying nigga, and they go, well, where we're from, that's what they call you before they kill you.
Right.
And then, you know, B-12 says, oh, we still did that here too.
Well, and they pause and they look at each other first, right?
Yeah.
They look at each other and they think about that and they go, yeah, they still do that here too.
Yeah. And so, I want, you know, a good satire, in my opinion, you know, you gotta cut deep all around. You know, I just can't make fun of white folks. I gotta challenge black folks. I gotta challenge everybody if you can. And so, you know, it's kind of, hopefully it's a, you know, a section of the film that kind of makes black people especially have to kind of, you know, examine, you know, where we're at in this transition we're going through right now.
You also deal with the word shit. And the many variations of that. This is the shit, which is why I make that reference at the beginning of this yes. show. I mean, yes. people are like, when they're upset, they're like, shit. And they're like, but when they're happy, they're like, man, this is the shit. You know, and the time travelers, they just are completely, I don't understand what
the hell's going on here.
What's the deal?
You know, that's when you put yourself in their point of view. I mean, all those things just start coming out, you know, and it's hip and it's fun, because there's all these things that we take for granted that everybody just knows. And how would you know that if somebody hadn't told you or explained it to you? It's very bizarre.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just a black thing or a white thing. It's just, what the hell? It all just
what
kind
the
of,
hell? Yeah, it just—it's beyond. It's a human thing. It's an American thing, very much so.
Exactly. Now, I mentioned that you had worked with Spike Lee on Chirac, and this was interesting to me. People talk about Woody Allen as having the early Woody Allen, the funny Woody Allen, and then he became more serious. The
right.
early Spike Lee, She's Got to Have It, really funny, and then, you know, it Do the Right Thing. Things become. Jungle Fever
sure.
becomes much more serious about things. This, especially with the black and white and the color, struck me quite a bit like She's Got to Have It in some ways, and that there's a lot of funny, there's a lot of there's tone, but there's a seriousness that goes through it. But that movie was more funny, I thought, than trying to be socially conscious the way he was
right.
has been much later.
Right.
You did this, though, I think, before you worked with him.
Yes, I did. It's taken a while to come out, but yeah, you know, I have a film called CSA, Confederate States of America, and that's you know, it imagines what happens if the South had won the Civil War, and that's when I met Spike. And so we've had this project. He read the script. It was called at that time "Got to Give It Up," and he read the script, and that was like almost 15 years ago now. And so he read it then, and we tried to get it made a long time ago and couldn't quite get it made. And so he called me back 2 years ago and he said, "You still have that script?" I said, "Yeah, I still got it." And he said, let's set it in Chicago and call it Chirac. And so you know, we've known each other kind of a long time, but never had a chance to officially work together until then.
Well, and I told you off the air that I was confused by the title until I watched the trailer for it last night, and now I'm like, oh, okay, now I want to go see it. But I would have gone back and changed the title back. That's just me. Sorry, Spike. I love you, but that title just killed you on that one. I think it just didn't, you know.
Sure.
Maybe it made sense in Chicago.
It definitely makes sense in Chicago.
Okay, but you know. If that didn't carry over to Detroit or Atlanta,
right. Yes.
You're lost. I'm sorry.
Well, but, you know, yeah, I hear you, brother. I hear you.
But I want to. I am going to go see the movie now. Now that I know what it's about.
Yes, and it's a satire too, like Destination.
Yeah, it looked really interesting. Trailer looked really good, so I will go see that now. And now I got to ask: has Spike seen Destination Planet Negro?
You know, I don't know if he has or not. I don't think so. Oh. You know, I mean, you know, I'm hoping he will at some point. But you know, he's a busy guy, and you know, we just finally just hadn't.
Spike Lee is busy. What are you talking about? What's the man got going on? I mean,
I have to say, Spike is probably the hardest working dude I've ever met in my life. That boy, he never stops working. So that's one of the things I admire about him.
All right, folks, if you're watching this interview and you're if you're listening but not watching, let's say, I just want to point out that it was my guest who said "that boy" in reference to Spike Lee. Did not come from my mouth. I got his permission to use that other word, but I never referred to Spike Lee that way. Sorry. Just want to make clear that there's no doubt in anybody's mind.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay. I have a very mixed family, and I want to make sure none of them start thinking that came out of my mouth.
You know what? You don't want to go to Thanksgiving and some people they're waiting for you. Or
oh my
right?
God! I don't need that in my life. So now, am I because this was done before Chirac? Am I attributing too much to Spike's influence on this? It seems like I just felt, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I think some people say that the black and white color is a connection to, you know, the Wizard of Oz, which is a huge, you know, Kansas thing. You know, growing up in Kansas, you know, being in Kansas still, you know, I mean, the only connection I have with the Wizard of Oz is that when you were a kid and you'd be playing out in the street, and you know how the Wizard of Oz would only come on like one time a year.
Right.
You know, and your mother would, when it would come on, your mother would, you know, yell out the window, you know, the Wizard of Oz is on, and all the kids, we'd stop playing ball, and we'd all run in the house to watch the movie because it was that one time, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, no, I think, you know, I've been, you know, doing satire a long time, really, and you know, I think Spike's a you know, a great filmmaker, but this was kind of my own thing in this a little bit, I think.
Well, of course, I have to, in fairness, I have to point out that Spike had the black and white segment of "She's Got to Have It" because he ran out of money.
Yeah, I mean that's I mean, you know, that's the reality of a lot of choices when you make a really truly independent film is that it comes in. But this was actually conceptually was always the black and white color.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah, that was always the deal with this.
Tell me about your role on campus. You're teaching film.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I teach at the University of Kansas, and I'm a professor there, and I teach screenwriting. I teach a class in the history of African Americans in film. I've taught directing, and you know, it's a really good gig, and I really love teaching it. You know, you learn from students and students learn from you, and you know, you get to be around young people, and it keeps you, you know, young and challenges you in various ways. And and you get to talk about interesting stuff too. I mean, at least I try to, and I think students really, really like that. And as well, I mean, it, you know, being a professor has helped me to make, you know, 7 feature films. Mm. So that's been a really good, that's all part of my research at the University of Kansas. Destination is technically my research. So you know, that's a pretty good gig.
I was going to say, nice work if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it, yeah.
Undergraduate or graduate or both?
A little bit of both. Hmm. You know, a little bit of both. But yeah, I've been mainly undergrad, you know, mainly undergraduate students. But yeah, and Lawrence is a, you know, great place to live. It's a, you know, college town. It's the only place to live in Kansas, in my opinion, you know, and we've got a, you know, redneck governor now, and you know, he's depleted the entire state of every natural resource we have, and he's just like burned and pillaged the entire state here. So it's pretty rough these days, but it's where I grew up, and you know, it's what I know, I guess.
It's home. I get it.
It's home.
So I was thinking, and I haven't seen Confederate States of America, CSA, but it seems like sort of the what if, from what I was reading, the what if genre is kind of your thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of a what if guy a little bit. Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, I've always been a kind of a history nerd. And, you know, I think you see that in Destination as well, you know, the history thing, the importance of history. And you know, I've mentioned that my parents were older. So all of that has had a big influence on me. And I just think that, you know, people need to acknowledge more of how we get to these good places in American life. You know, we don't get there by, you know, we don't just show up one day and everything's great. You know, it's been a lot of people sacrificing, you know, for a lot of years to get folks to get to, so me and you can have a conversation like this, you know, and we shouldn't take that for granted. And, you know, so it's, so that's a big part of, you know, a lot of the movies I make is deals with those type of themes.
So, last question, what's next?
Well, I have a new movie we've just finished, and this one only cost $20,000.
That's a four times
I've got rich on this one, man.
Man.
But it's called The Association, and
great band, Cherish. I love that.
Yeah,
song.
Yeah, I love that song. Right.
I thought it was about time somebody do a bio pic
well,
on those,
you know,
guys.
They just sung so well together. you know, it's actually about basketball, and it stars Scott Pollard, who was just on Survivor, actually.
Oh.
And he's a former NBA player, and he was a big star at the University of Kansas here. And we deal with the whole thing of how athletes, you know, how they have these great pro careers and they make all this money and they're broke by the time they're done. And we deal with kind of the corruption of agents and you know, the NCAA and all those kind of things. So it's going to be a really interesting film. So kind of be looking for that. It's called The Association.
When will that be out, do you know?
We're going to premiere it probably this fall, and then it'll be out sometime after that.
Very cool. All right. Well, maybe come back.
Yes, indeed.
All right.
Anytime. It's been nothing but fun.
That'd be great. Folks, you can watch it makes me giggle just to say this. You can watch Destination Planet Negro. And by the way, there's a line in the movie. They talk about Negroes in space. And I went, boy, what a great line. You know, I'm thinking Muppets in space, Negroes
yes,
in space.
Yes, Negroes in space.
Trans in space, you know.
That's right.
The whole series there. Anyway, you can see Mr. Wilmot's film on video on demand and digital HD from your local cable provider. Is it available through like iTunes, things like that yet?
Yeah, it's on iTunes and it's on Amazon Prime as well.
Excellent. And can people find, is there a website for the film? Are you on social media at all?
There's a planetnegro.com and then, you know, look us up on Facebook as well.
Excellent.
Destination Negro.
Excellent.
And I'm on there as well.
Okay. Kevin Wilmot, it was delightful to talk to you. I really enjoyed the film, and even better was talking about the film. So thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Appreciate it, man.
Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of seriously confused white people who may or may not be 1/32nd Sioux in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.